It's basketball season, and we've got you covered. The Ringer NBA show breaks down the latest and greatest around the league 5 days a week. Check out the Ringer NBA show on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by UGG. Y'all know UGG is a brand that athletes wear all the time in the tunnel and on travel days. Well, I bet you think UGG season is only during the colder months of the year. Au contraire, you're wrong. You need to check out the latest spring drop from UGG. They have everything from sandals to clogs. I like the sandals. UGG has you covered for your next spring adventure. Shop the Golden Collection at UGG.com. This episode is brought to you by Empower. You got money questions like, can I retire early? What are my best savings options? Can I afford to pay for my kids' education? Luckily, Empower has all the answers. With Empower's real-time dashboard and real live conversations, you get clarity on your real life financial goals. So join 18 million Americans and Empower what's next. Start today at empower.com. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more. Sponsored by Empower, not an endorsement or a statement of satisfaction by a client.
Oh my God. You're obsessed with it. You're actually obsessed with that thing. You're done. It's a Champions League podcast. It's not a Europa League podcast. You want to switch this to Friday so we can do Europa League podcast? Would that make it feel better?
Yes, please.
Okay, here we go. Hello and welcome back to the Stadio Podcast and Ringer FC. I'm Musa Kwonga.
I'm Ryan Hun.
Ryan, how are you doing?
I am okay, thanks. I'm a bit croaky this morning. Don't know what's wrong.
Me too, actually. Me too, I'm croaky.
Getting old. All that talking.
No, it could just be age. I think it's age.
We are quite old now.
I am old. I was talking to my friends in the WhatsApp group and they were like, oh, we're doing this exercise, that. And I was suddenly like, hang on a minute. I was doing that when I was their age, but I'm 41 now. Like at 35, I was sprinting around. But now at 41, I'm like, it's just over that hill where you have a top speed above third gear. You don't have it anymore. Even third gear, second gear more like.
Ah, you've earned it though.
Yeah, I guess so. Got my place in the sun now.
How many books have they put out this year? That's all I say.
Okay, that's true. That's true.
Yeah, listen. Yeah, you can lift, bro, but can you write, bro?
Actually, these ones really can.
Oh no.
They really.
All right, in that case I've got nothing for you. Sorry, mate. Yeah, get out
better,
there.
Better writers than I am, actually. Yeah, better get out there.
Oh well.
Anyway, on a brighter note, Champions League.
Why do you always, you just skip the admin. The admin is there for a reason.
I'm hyping people.
It's to keep structure.
Yes, oh, but.
God. You couldn't play in any of these sides. Two vibes. Apart from Real Madrid, you could probably play for this Real Madrid.
I could definitely play for Real, definitely.
You'd probably be
the front three, wide forward.
Poch would have binned you off as soon as he got to PSG. Like, this guy's two vibes for me.
Or maybe on the left wing.
I don't need a pass-first striker.
That's true, actually. Everyone does.
Not in that front three. No space for him.
Listen, Ryan, this is not about me. This is bigger than me.
Okwonga's got PSG to West Ham on loan written all over him.
Oh, my God. Listen, this is not about me. Let's do admin.
Oh, it's not about you, is it? Really? 159 episodes and we've finally got the first admission that none of this has been about Musa. I see. Finally, we got him, everyone. We got him. admin, Wrighty's House went up on Wednesday. You and Jeanette were on, and it was a really, really great episode. I thought there was quite heavy opening section about Wrighty's new documentary that's coming out on the BBC called Home Truths, about his experience growing up with emotional, physical abuse, and talks to a lot of other people who went through the same thing. So if you haven't checked that, go and check that. It's on the Ringer FC feed. TheRinger.com/soccer. There will be pieces going up. Maybe not quite this week, but maybe there'll be some going up next week. A Stadio Archers playlist on Spotify. If you like the music that we play out on each episode, we put them all in a playlist. Newest one at the top. So search for Stadio Outros on Spotify. And yeah, if you do listen to us on an app that allows you to rate and review, please do so. It'd be very kind. And yeah, apart from that, just hope everyone's staying safe, staying well, getting vaccinated if you can. If I could get a vaccine, I would get one.
I would definitely get a vaccine.
However, yeah. It's a bit of a slow roll out in Germany. So you and I are staying put, just staying inside as much as possible. Although I did venture outside yesterday. It was lovely. My 1 weekly jaunt outside the hood.
Yeah, and I was planning to do that today and the weather's terrible.
Oh yeah, the weather was beautiful yesterday. It was lovely.
Yeah,
I think I got a bit of a tan. I mean, I didn't, but I kind of did.
You had an aspiration for a tan. That's all right.
Existential tan.
It was all a bit existential, the Champions League. Anyway,
League.
It was.
I'm trying to think if there's anything else we need to chat about. Thanks to everyone who's emailed us. We've got a big backlog of emails to get through. We will be working through them very soon.
Yep.
Apologies. Last few weeks has been a bit hectic. Is there any more admin, Musa? There's always something I forget.
No. What to read, check out.
No.
Stuff to listen to. No, we're good. Admin's good.
All right, then. Well, today we're going to talk about the Champions League, mention a few other games and some happenings that happened this week because there's more Bundesliga manager mayhem.
Rumblings, yeah.
It's like a Bundesliga. Yeah, it's like a Bundesliga Royal Rumble.
It is, actually. There's just so much.
Oh, my God. Nagelsmann is going to Bayern. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my God. You can just imagine Jerry the King Lawler commentating on all the Bundesliga like merry-go-round. It'd be a bit amazing.
It's wild, yeah. I mean, I'm an old man, so I'd refer to musical chairs, but no one plays it anymore. The wireless radio.
Oh my goodness. I think we should probably move on. Let's get into the football after this.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All right, man, so I'd probably like to start with the biggest game of the week, which was Greuterfurt 3, Sandhausen 2.
I knew it. You know, I was just wondering which game will he pick. I knew it wouldn't be Championship. I knew you'd go there.
On a serious note, this game was absolute chaos. Absolute chaos. And had, everyone's like, really? But this had massive implications.
No, because your audience, this is what we came for. We knew what this was.
Stop it. This is massive implications for who will be in the Bundesliga next season, though, because that means that Greuterfurt have opened up a 6-point gap over Hamburg, who are playing tonight. We're recording this ahead of Hamburg's game in hand over the top two.
It was funny, even Toni Kroos was tweeting about Hamburg's suffering. Yeah,
Holstein Kiel drew the other day, though, which was a little bit lucky for Hamburg, but they've still got two games in hand on Hamburg and they're only a point behind. So, Hamburger, yet again, having a bit of a season where they could potentially miss out on promotion back to the Bundesliga for, the third year in a row?
Third year in a row, and not just the third year in a row, but the third collapse in a row, to be honest. Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing, yeah.
Keep an eye on the Zweite Bundesliga because it is amazing. But let's go to Paris.
Yes.
This was a good game of football.
It was a very good game of football. I watched it again straight after.
It was really good,
It was really good because I wanted to sort of unravel what had happened and see it again. And I saw new things and I watched it again.
What did you see? What did you see, Musa? Tell me.
Well, there was a lot of talk of PSG losing it and all the rest of it. But I think people have to understand the pressure that Manchester City apply, they force errors in ways that are extremely subtle. It's demoralizing what City do. PSG started well, I thought, really, really well. And there was a lot of talk, criticism of the performances of the key players. But actually, I think this is a City victory rather than a PSG implosion. So City went 2-1 away from home.
I think it's a little bit of column A and a little bit of column B.
I would go more strongly for a City win, actually. But I'll hear you out. I don't mind to,
Well, I think that PSG played some amazing stuff in the first half. They probably could have gone 2-up. Paredes had that chance from the corner, which I think was probably a better chance than it looked.
Yeah.
City didn't, were playing with not an out-and-out nine again. But this time around, I actually tweeted about it in the second half after the second City goal went in. Like, centrally, like, the back four on the whole, kind of, it looked like they've got a bit used to not having anything or anyone to really pick up.
Yeah.
Like Marquinhos and Kimpembe didn't really have much to do. There was that one chance where, is it Paredes hit, had like a high foot clearance that they were kind of claiming for a penalty for.
Yeah.
But it didn't really feel like City caused them a huge amount of central problems. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
They had a couple of chances like where Bernardo went down the right-hand side. He had that one at the back post that he hit with the outside of his left foot.
Yeah.
Foden had that one, which I actually think he should have hit first time. The one that he took a touch and then hit straight at. Caught it really nice, but he hit it straight at Navas.
He should have hit low as well. Yeah. I think it was also the problem, his position was the direction of it.
But it was all in front of PSG, really, on the whole.
Yeah.
But then City started to grow into the game a little bit more. And then the switch in the second half, where I think Pep pushed like Foden and De Bruyne a lot higher up, that seemed to really rattle PSG and they just couldn't deal with it.
Foden and De Bruyne arriving late in the first half, and the second half, they were just up there.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think, weirdly enough, I think the intensity of what City were doing wore PSG down.
Mm.
And the reason I say that, so Bakker, I thought, actually had a pretty decent first half, but you saw already the seeds of the demise because they had real troubles. PSG, the moment they were asked to do anything other than defend and actually build play from the back, they couldn't. And if you can't build from the back on the flanks, which they couldn't really do, you put astonishing pressure on the central areas.
Mm.
And that begins to tell, because you're like, if City know that no creativity is going to come up the flanks, like the amount of times PSG tried playing out from the back and couldn't really do it, right, from down the flank, it didn't really work. And that was, normally we see in these big Champions League games, the outlet pass down the flank is essential. The fullbacks just aren't good enough, right?
Mm.
It's a quality issue. And that's no disrespect to Bakker. It's a level, it's very, very difficult to play make from a fullback position. There's like very few fullbacks in the world that can do it to any level. So they had that struggle. So then City going to the second half knowing they're going to have to play through the middle. And then it gets so congested. In fact, I thought it was remarkable that PSG even threatened the goal in the second half. They had that amazing period from like 53 to 58 where Mbappe goes close twice.
Mm.
First with a brilliant cross across goal, Verratti just misses it. And then 5 minutes later goes through and the keeper's very quick off, Edison's very quick off his line.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And it all changes. If either of those go in, it all changes, right? But basically, Mbappe's left to forage by himself because his fullbacks aren't giving support. Now, what that means is then City just flood the middle. And that thing they do, when City can flood the middle, what they then start is dangerous because they know the fullbacks aren't a danger from PSG. So they allow their fullbacks to go in field. And the beauty of that is it's win-win. If your fullback creates something when they go in field, you've got an overload in the middle, they lose the ball, they can just scurry back to the flank because nothing's going to happen. So City basically set up shop in the kind of middle and final third, and the two goals that come, or the two key moments of the game, the Idrissa Gueye yellow, which gives the free kick for the first, and then Idrissa Gueye red, which would have been a straight red. They both come from frustration. And it's really interesting because almost the emblem of the game and PSG's frustration through Man City's constant possession is that moment when Idrissa Gueye concedes the free kick for the yellow, which is frustration because they haven't had the ball for like 2-3 minutes.
Mm.
And then Paredes kicks it away.
Mm.
Like just, and I was like, that's an existential yellow. That is literally like, you haven't touched the ball. You haven't built anything for what, 20 minutes?
Yeah. I mean, we're going to lace in some questions throughout, but we had one from Pipe Dog who said, do you think PSG's attitude towards the domestic league sets them up for the type of second half failures that we saw during the City game? It seems like whenever things go south in League One, they start fouling, acting erratically, maybe more of a sign of a team at a crossroads. And I think this has been a trait of them this season. It started with the Marseille game really early on in the season, which was one of the spikiest games I've seen this season.
Mm.
And if you contrast that to Man City going a goal down, do you know what it's like, actually? I think Man City, it was like this for this game, I thought. They're like a giant python that's been attacked by an alligator. Or a crocodile. So basically the crocodile's got it within its jaws and the crocodile thinks it's won.
Yeah,
but it doesn't notice that the python is actually slowly constricting around the rest of the crocodile's body.
Exactly.
And before they know it, actually can't keep their jaw clenched around the neck of the python kind of thing.
It's exactly that. Yeah.
At first they get the first bite in and they think, haha, I got you. And actually the python's just like, this is fine.
That was the first round. This is totally fine.
And even when the goal went in, the first PSG goal, well, the PSG goal, which I thought was an amazing set piece goal, by the way. The delivery was incredible from Di Maria. And Marquinhos came, he just seemed to come from nowhere.
They're the two players that always step up for PSG.
Yeah,
always.
I mean, Marquinhos is brilliant. We've been a huge fan of Marquinhos for a long time. He's still only 26, which I think is wild because it feels like he's been around for forever.
Yeah.
But he came from his run, I thought, was brilliant. It was like he started in Versailles.
Yeah.
It was like he started so far away.
Yeah.
And this is one of those what I think is going to raise a debate about. It always does. Whenever anyone scores a goal from a set piece where there's any element of zonal marking, people always go on about the zonal marking thing. But the thing is, even if someone had tracked him, there were enough bodies there that they would have been blocked off anyway.
Do you know what's funny? It's like basketball. You know, basketball is much more forgiving of football when it comes to this stuff. When basketball, when they concede, they say elite offense beats elite defense.
Yeah.
City have an elite defense, right? But you have a world-class deliverer of the ball in Di Maria, one of the best at his peak on that. And then you have Marquinhos, his movement is so good, he can play as a DM and a centre-back. Like, that guy is not a clown. When it comes to space, he is elite at understanding how to exploit it. And sometimes it's just a great goal. And that, I think, is City's strength, the understanding that you can either just play through the pain, go a goal down, keep playing football. And they kept playing football.
And they never panicked.
Yeah,
like,
never.
They did have a couple of moments in that first half where there were a couple of misplaced passes just outside their own box and you were a bit like,
Yeah, right. Absolutely, yeah, yeah.
But it was pretty fleeting.
It was minimal. I want to talk about the winning goal because the analysis of that under zone was brilliant. So you see the ball go through the wall, past Kimpembe and past Navas, who's stranded and furious for the second time in the second half. And the analysis on Dazn was brilliant. They were like, it was the wall before the wall. City set up those three people that just basically ducked. And I just wonder how much of the ball the PSG wall saw, because all of a sudden they're like, it's the blink of an eye and it's there. So it looks worse than it is. It's not the greatest wall, but I think that confusion they sowed with that wall was kind of brilliant. I mean, it's not the kind of trick you can use many times because people would be wise to it. But I thought was a really interesting little innovation.
There's a lot going on with walls at the moment, though. They're getting a bit tech.
Yeah, they are.
Poor Verratti was just like, really? I got down here for this?
I know. Basically, the ball go over his own shoulder.
But also, Verratti's quite little, so he doesn't cover the full width of a wall when he's laying down. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, Verratti was a funny one because his positioning as well, like I love Verratti as a 10 because I think he anchors the front line really well. And I think it can work, and I think it worked a reasonable degree. But then you just saw him, like, the amount of position and ground that he covered in the second half, he was dragged all over the place. Like, because you're helping out. And the one thing that was interesting that I didn't like from Neymar in the second half, because he had, I think, quite a strong first half, was the bit when he shouts at Bakker, even though Bakker, like, he plays a pass to him that he can never possibly get because he's wrong footed. And then he screams at him. And, you know, I know it's Neymar's own frustration, but that's not a good look. You know, you're meant to be carrying a team and you've given him something to execute that is not possible to execute.
Mm.
So it was a bit of a strange energy there just watching that, I think.
We didn't even mention De Bruyne's goal, which I thought was, this is one of those, like, if you want to show a young footballer how to deliver a ball.
Oh my goodness.
And this is something actually weirdly that we were always taught growing up. Playing football. You know, if you're going to cross a ball like that, aim for the far post with a bounce so that if no one gets a touch on it, it can sneak in. And it's a really
great piece of advice.
I mean, it is basically because you saw how they actually, I think you mentioned the DAZN analysis, like Sandro Wagner has been really great since he's been on DAZN. I think he's a really good analyst. They were talking about this goal as well. And it's perfect because there's the whole cliche about like the kind of corridor of uncertainty, but this is a different thing. I think this is a, you know, in swinging from that kind of pocket, just on the inside of either channel,
horrible to deal with
towards the far post, because, you know, Keylor Navas is an unbelievable goalkeeper. One of the world's best, I think.
Yeah. Without doubt.
And you could see how much trouble he had with that cross because there were a line of City players coming in waiting to attack that ball. So he's prepared for any slight touch, like John Stones was coming in at the back post.
Yeah.
You know, he's waiting or expecting an opposition player to get a touch on that and redirect it towards goal. And then by the time that touch doesn't come, it's too late. And it's what the one bounce kind of skips it off into the into the far post.
Yeah.
It's a cross from De Bruyne, but it's a very, very deliberately placed one. For that very reason.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And that was, I thought you was great in this game. If you think about it, you saw two set piece goals that were brilliant.
Yeah.
Maybe the Mahrez one, I think the brilliance came more from, like you said, the kind of arrangement of that wall before the wall. I think if the PSG wall had been remotely adequate, then obviously that would have just hit one of them in the chest.
Yeah, and should have done still. Yeah, it's still on them to an extent.
I actually tweeted about this. I was just like, you know, if you're going to wall, then wall. But if you don't, if you ain't, then don't.
Absolutely. And two-way goals for Manchester City.
Hmm.
And really impressive. Pep hasn't always liked away games in the Champions League knockout stages.
He has not.
And he really enjoyed himself. He looked really, really happy.
To be honest, he hasn't always liked home ones either.
No, that's true. And there was something quite poignant about this game, and it came in the form of a player that wasn't on the field, Raheem Sterling.
Mm.
Pep Guardiola and Raheem Sterling have, you know, a long and a successful history working together. And to see Raheem Sterling on the bench was interesting and poignant and a bit sad, because Raheem Sterling's had a tough time in the knockout stages. Disallowed goals, you know, frustrated with finishing against Lyon last year. And watching how Mahrez has leaped the queue, Mahrez has leapt over him and Leroy Sané and Pep's affections. And that's interesting. And then you've got Foden there too. Foden provides something a bit different, I think, to all of them. Foden provides elite ball retention, playmaking at that point. You know, he provides something different. And when Mahrez was there, I was like, is he going to be the first choice at some point? But he absolutely is now.
Mm.
Like in those go-to games, he's absolutely trusted. And I just wonder, without wanting to sound too dramatic, what the immediate way back is for Raheem Sterling in these games, like consistently, because Mahrez goes either way, finishes beautifully, is a danger from set pieces, even when the wall is good. So yeah, it's almost like watching City evolve, and you've watched them evolve, hopefully not beyond Raheem Sterling, but you've watched them evolve beyond a nine to an extent. There was a question actually that someone put in about how many goals does City score with a proper nine.
Yeah, from at Jota Flowers. How many goals per game do City score with a proper nine?
Yeah, and now I think unless you have one of three elite nines in the world, I don't think you score more than you scored last night. I really think that the false nine thing works that well for them, because the fluidity of that system breaks people down. And, you know, City are evolving so fast that some players get caught out of step in that evolution.
Mm.
There's very few other clubs in the world with a player like Sergio Aguero in the mix that don't use him.
Yeah. I think the thing is with the City trademark goal, working it to the kind of down the channels, to the line, cut back, that is as executed without an out and out nine as it is with a nine.
Exactly. Just get people to crash the box. Yeah. That's it. Get them to arrive late.
And a lot of elite teams like that, I think they can play without out and out lines if they need to.
And it's the worry for, yeah, sorry.
Sorry, no, I was going to say, but I think that's the joy of being an elite team, I suppose, is being adaptable.
Yeah. This is what happens in football, though. A system becomes successful and it gets tested to its limits and gets pushed almost to the point of absurdity.
Mm.
And then, so the nine threatens to be obsolete and then becomes relevant again, because sometimes all that can break down a defense that sits, you know, 10 in its final third is a set piece and a tall player.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have it in the NBA as well. Small ball is the way forward. But then suddenly you get a team that basically will just play physical and then need your big players, you need your bigs again to like just reset the balance. It's like summoning Godzilla out of the ocean. So yeah.
Let's take a couple of questions quick before we move on from the PSG City game. Drewber, shouts to Drewby. Is it time to stack players on top of each other behind the wall to avoid what happened to PSG?
Yes.
I like this. Just putting them on top of each other like Lego.
Yeah, great idea.
Leo Watkins says, are we too willing to overanalyze walls with people lying down, jumping, not jumping, turning away, holding the balls? Can't we just accept that putting five big blokes there is enough? Credit the free kick takers. The free kick takers get credit when they execute a really good free kick that goes in. For example, like when was it Bruno Fernandes went under the wall not that long ago. It was this season, right? Was it last season?
This year.
It's all one big blur. I think Messi broke free kicks a lot, especially in Spain, because I can't remember the game it was, but I remember one I always referenced where like someone ran back on the goal line.
Yes, I know the one. I know the one. Yeah,
and then
when it goes
moved
in the top right
again.
Did he go in the top right?
And then, no, I think he dropped back to go top. So it would have been Messi's top. Yeah, top right, sorry. Yeah. And then he came back into the wall and then Messi put it in anyway.
I know the one. And then you just see their faces. Oh, the funniest thing.
You just can't defend it, like, sometimes. So
I know that sounds mean.
I think, credit the free kick takers when they execute something that's amazing. I think in the case of the Mahrez one, the actual free kick itself wasn't that great.
No.
But you said the little three in the City wall before the wall was the thing that caused the chaos.
Yeah, no, you're right. The Messi breaking free kicks thing. I've said this maybe before, but there are a few things I find funnier in football than just the still life.
Mm.
Immediately after Messi scored a free kick and the look on everyone's faces. And there's always one person with the expression like, don't blame me.
Yeah.
Like,
Paul Lopez.
Yeah, you knew what this was.
Paul Lopez.
Sadly.
Not again. Mark Wallace, shouts to Mark. He said, it's really City's to lose, isn't it? See, this is interesting though, because I don't think this tie is done yet.
No. Not with what PSG can do on the road.
Yeah.
Not with what PSG can do on the road. Not with what Mbappe showed us in that second half. No, absolutely not.
But I mean, like, this is the thing, like Mbappe, I think it was the first time in the Champions League game he didn't have a shot in the whole game. But away from home, Pep would have really wanted another goal, I think. I know that sounds obvious, but
he would have, but I don't know where it would have come from. I feel like 2-1 was I feel like it was a par result.
In terms of what he does for the second leg, I think that's going to...
Yeah, that's true.
But you know he's already losing sleep over it.
So. Of course he is. Yeah, it's Pep.
Yeah, I'm not sure though, whatever happens in the second legs of the other tie, which we'll come on to in a minute. You know, we've seen very recently that Chelsea could beat City. So...
Yeah, I don't think this is... done by any stretch. No. Because also, like, the thing that was really interesting about PSG's win over Bayern was Neymar making those infield runs, like cutting from slightly wide areas infield, and we didn't really see so much of that in the second half, well, really none of it. And that is what creates the chaos that basically allows Mbappe to feed off the, you know, whatever's left. And if Neymar can make those runs at the guts of City, they might get some joy in second leg. So we'll
one final thing on this, Idrissa Gueye is red, definitely red, wasn't
that
it?
Was that tackle was
not
they
were. Nice.
They call it in. They called it abscheulich, hideous, disgusting. They were like, that was really. I'd never heard. With German commentators are funny because they're much more opinionated. Like one of them was like, "Yeah, Rodri's the best six in the world." I'm like, you never hear that.
The guys on DAZN are pretty good. I think
I love it. Like in England, you hear English commentators going, "English players the best in the world." You hear that, but that's almost more like a partisan, you know, patriotic. They're like, just, they say it like they're talking to you in the bar.
Mm.
Like, but yeah, the tackle by Idrissa Gueye, he knew. And the Gundogan, you know, we talked about this in the chat, didn't we, in WhatsApp, like, I watched Gundogan on the ground, and I was like, please no. Like with all the injury troubles he's had, he doesn't deserve this. No. Like, no one deserves it, but he least of all.
It's a lot of a cop for lawn chat on the DAZN. What about PSG? They've lost their heads. They've lost their heads.
He was great with, and he was great, Gundogan, in just spreading the play and just keeping that pressure on. Very much like Fabregas, to be honest. And it was funny, when those goals went in, I thought to myself, these are like Fabregas goals. You know, those ones that like Arsenal would score them and Fabregas wouldn't get the assist, but the pressure he'd applied by switching the play and just keeping the heat on, it was all him.
Why do you have to do this to me?
Do what?
Just make me think about Cesc playing for Arsenal.
Oh no.
I'm going to go to a break and cry. See you in a minute.
This episode is brought to you by NetSuite by Oracle. Things are expensive these days, especially for businesses, from the materials to distribution, borrowing, wages, everything costs more. That's why businesses are making the smart choice and graduating to NetSuite by Oracle, the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. If you want to reduce costs and headaches, this is how you do it. It's never a bad idea to save money. Like right now, we got, you know, summer's coming up. Do you want to go away? Where are you going? Are you renting a place? You doing Airbnb? Going to a hotel? Need a little money for all that stuff. Why not try to save some money now? Over 37,000 companies have already made the switch. Do the math. See how much you'll profit with NetSuite, especially right now, because now through April 15th, NetSuite offering a one-of-a-kind flexible financing program. Head to netsuite.com/ringer. That's netsuite.com/ringer. This episode is brought to you by Lincoln and the all-new 2024 Nautilus Hybrid, featuring customizable 48-inch panoramic display, available Revel audio system, and available perfect position front seats with active motion massage. Oh my God, the world isn't wide enough. Visit Lincoln.com to learn more. Some models, trims, and features may not be available or may be subject to change. Check with your local retailer for current information. Lincoln and Nautilus are trademarks of Ford or its affiliates.
All right, let's go to Madrid. It was raining again.
It was bucketing.
What is it going on at the moment? I swear,
is there a microclimate over that stadium?
Maybe they're just doing it for the documentary. You know,
I've got friends around there. I should actually text someone and say, listen, is it actually raining in any other part of Madrid? Is it just that? Because it just feels like, What did Mourinho call it? There's a microclimate. For some reason, because we saw it in the Clásico.
Oh my God, that was biblical, the rain in the Clásico.
Compared to that, this was a puddle compared to this. Yeah.
It was raining last week for the Betis game. It's always raining in Madrid. And they had like their worst snowstorm in decades this year as well. So
goodness.
It's almost like there's some climate change potentially going on.
Who are we on standard to speculate, but yes. Precipitation, yes.
Okay. This game. Real Madrid 1, Chelsea 1. Handy away goal for Chelsea.
Hey, but Chelsea, listen. Chelsea missed a serious trick here. They missed a serious trick. This should have been 2-0. Should have been 2-0 at least.
They could have been out of sight, huh?
They should have been out of sight. The way they began, played on the front foot, and then they got wet, and they got quicker. And they were already started with speed. And they already basically sussed out that, you know, Kroos and Modric were not going to make line-breaking runs. They knew that. So they knew that was to an extent, Real were prone. And, you know, Real playing on the break with pace, it's one thing when you're doing against a back line, it's a bit less accomplished. But this Chelsea back line knows what it's doing. Mm. And it's enterprising. You know, you've got like Antonio Rudiger is more enterprising than most midfielders in terms of how he steps forward.
He's ace.
Yeah, and I thought that Chelsea with better finishing. Mm. This tie is not done because it's Real Madrid. It's never done. But it is decisive things have happened.
Yeah, the Werner miss was obviously a big one that people were talking about because they always do when Werner misses the chance. But I actually think Courtois did really well.
He did. It was both.
I mean, Werner should still be finishing that. We know this, but also...
I just think someone puts it high. I think it's one of those ones where... all I would say about that was...
A little bit timid.
I think it's just a directional thing. If he puts it high when it comes across, because again, everything else is there with Werner, isn't it? I mean, but the problem is now it's like he's had a tough time of it with, you know, North Macedonia and like all the rest of it. And they've cost the misses of, you know, unfortunately, if you're playing at an elite level, the misses will cost the team. And that's, you know, he got the great assist against them, which this is the thing, this could be important. But in terms of a plot line, if Chelsea do make it through, and they still can, and actually I think they still should.
Oh, I think they'll make it through.
Right. Now, that matchup is quite favourable against City. I think City rather face Real in a final if they get through than Chelsea.
Yeah, I agree. I think both PSG and City would rather play Real Madrid than play Chelsea.
Oh, Chelsea's ball movement, again.
Because I actually think the 1-0 flattered Real Madrid.
Yeah.
Benzema's goal was great. He did have another chance.
Oh, the one off the post. Yeah, the beautiful one off the post.
Yeah, there was the Varane header, which maybe he could have done a little bit better with, but I don't think it was a glaringly obvious chance. But
yeah, shout out to Mason Mount as well, superb.
Well, yeah, I mean they're just playing well. Like Tuchel has got them playing amazingly well. Going back to Stamford Bridge with the away goal, that's all you kind of really need in a semi final.
I still back them to do it. To be honest, they are the better team, but in my opinion, and I always felt like
than Real Madrid.
Yeah, the challenge I think that we saw it in the Women's Champions League with Lyon. The problem is when teams play the idea of Madrid or the idea of Lyon rather than the actual team. And I'm not saying that Chelsea did that. I don't think Chelsea basically had nerves. I think it was just a finishing thing. You look at like Pulisic and his finish, for example, he basically walks the ball into the goal. That is as calm a finish you will see at this stage of a knockout competition where he basically has, there's an option maybe to pass to Werner, but he's like, no, I'm just going to walk this in. I just think Chelsea need to iron out is that final third issue. But Tuchel will again. He's like Pep, he'll have been losing sleep over this already. Mm. So yeah, really nicely set up for the second leg. And And Madrid didn't offer really anything other than that goal.
Man, it's so obvious, but they miss Ramos so much. It's like one of those where, was it like weird record that they've, all of they're not the games that they've been knocked out, or the ties they've been knocked out in the Champions League recently has been when he's not been there or something?
Right, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Is he going to be back for the second leg?
I think he's back for that.
But Marcelo isn't, because he's on polling duty, which is one of the most random.
It's random. It's not the wildest loss. But the problem is in the absence of Mendy as well. Mendy and Marcelo gone. I mean, Madrid have just been threadbare. And I said this before as well.
This is a pretty big loss if you think about it. The guy captained them.
Yeah.
On Tuesday. Yeah. It was such a random reason to. You would have thought that they would have given him an exemption for that. Sure.
Do you know what I think, though? The beauty of democracy.
Oh, God. Josh Hedge 93 said, what is your favourite / best case scenario for a first leg score? Home win with an away goal? 1-1 draw?
Honestly, 3-0.
3-0 for the away team?
3-0 for the home 3-0 for the home team and just play the kids in the second leg.
Oh, I mean, as a neutral watching the game, like, what's your favourite? Like, I quite like both of these scorelines. I think a one goal difference, but with an away goal. I mean, if you're going to have the away goals rule, you might as well have an away goal to make it interesting.
I like 2-1 to the home team.
2-1 to the home team's good.
That's my favorite. Yeah, that's my favorite one for the first leg.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah.
The problem 0-0 is it becomes a straight shootout, and I don't like that.
Mm.
I want everyone to have a little bit more skin in the game. I want the uncertainty of, like, do I sit back? Do I go forward? 0-0, you just have to, like. But 2-1, it's like you're caught between, do we go for the, because for both teams in a way, the next goal can be the killer goal.
Mm. So this question from Citroen 1, how do you prepare to counter Zidane's dark magic? The semi-final is already frankly an overachievement for this Real Madrid side based on injuries and lack of signings. Against most teams, it's just play better. And yeah, I could see Real Madrid somehow winning a final despite being the worst team left in the competition. Learn behaviour, I think.
The scary thing about Madrid is, in the most interesting games they've been involved in this season, they've been the least interesting team.
Mm. Didn't you write a piece about that?
Yeah, they're like the house that always wins. Yeah. Like, everyone goes to Las Vegas and has a lovely time. Then, like, at the end, the casino collects. And how do you counter Real? I think you target their legends. Not Ramos. I think Ramos is kind of I think you target Toni Kroos first and then Modric.
I think movement around that midfield.
Yeah, I think that's the one. I think you target them with the... Yeah. Yeah.
I think this is the thing that, because do you remember when, was it Tuchel's first game? I always referenced this game away at Wolves, and it was 0-0, and everyone was just like, is he that good? And I was just like, the ball movement was unbelievable. Like, completely mesmerizing. Mm. That Real Madrid midfield isn't rapid, isn't particularly mobile, and isn't particularly young, really. I mean, you've got Casemiro in there when he's fit, but like Modric and Kroos are hardly young whippersnappers. If you pass them to death around that midfield and actually target Varane.
Yeah.
If you're going to go down the middle. They don't like not having their way, Real Madrid. And no team does, but I think that Real Madrid specifically, because they're Real Madrid, I think Chelsea will have too much for them in the second leg. And I think at home, you'll probably see them pass them to death.
You know what it is? For me, the game is the Leeds-Man City game, the 1-1 at Elland Road. They need to be as disrespectful to Real as Leeds were to Man City. That bit, well, I always talk about this when De Bruyne had the ball stolen. When he's about to play the through ball, you need to have that level of disrespect.
Yeah. Do you know what? I don't think Tuchel will do it, but it's got Olivier Giroud. It's got 0-0 till, or maybe it's got like, let me think. I'm trying to think.
I wonder if he uses Giroud, to be honest.
It's got, do you know what? It's got 1-1, 85th minute, Giroud coming on, scoring the winner, energy.
Because I think he likes the fluidity of the front three. I think he likes that so much and what it gives you.
Mm.
And I still think, weirdly enough, I still think that is maybe the best configuration of the front three for chance creation, because you've got Mount pressing high and completing all those passes in the final third. Werner's movement is still great. Although there was a slightly worrying thing I did see where Werner made a couple of runs after he missed his chance and the release didn't come. And I just wonder if there was an element of, like, subconsciously, we can do this ourselves, we're going to go alone. And there was a couple of times when he made really good runs to the flanks and he wasn't released into space. These are small margins, and I'm sure Chelsea will sort it out. But yeah, back to go through.
I agree. Let's very quickly talk about the Women's Super League. Arsenal beat West Ham on Wednesday night. 2-0, yeah. Two goals. One from Viv Miedema angry goal. I think this was an angry goal. And Kim Little scoring with 12 minutes to go. That was the games in hand played in the Super League this week, which means Arsenal are now comfortably in third place, back like in a Champions League spot. They've got three.
One thing I will say, yeah, carry on, sorry.
No, sorry, 3 points ahead of Manchester United with a far superior goal difference.
Mm.
Two games to play in the Super League.
Everton got a chance maybe to be decisive. I mean, still though.
Yeah, I mean, this is tricky because Arsenal have Everton away next, I think.
And yes. Then United have them as well.
And then United have them at home on the last day of the season. So Everton could be very much the Mainz of the Women's Super League.
Indeed, indeed.
Having a big say in who goes through to the Champions League this season. The other game in the Super League was Birmingham City and Villa. They drew 1-1. Should we talk Bundesliga quick?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Let's get into it.
Before we get out of here. Well, yeah. Actually, before we move on, let's have this one question from Emily Oram, who said, what would your outfit be if you were managing your team in the Champions League final, assuming you were allowed to detour for the regulation branded suit? I actually retweeted this with a picture of the dude from the Big Lebowski just sat there in the bowling alley. It's my stock go-to when anyone says, what's your manager outfit? It's just the dude.
Wow. I think I'd probably go actually quite Wenger, to be honest, with the suit.
We've done this question though, but not for a final, because you came out with an absolute scorcher when you said you'd be a Manchester United manager but wear a yellow tie.
I'd wear a red tie this time, but what I'd do is I'd have a crane at the very bottom because I'd probably be the first British Ugandan manager in a Champions League final.
I think that's a safe bet, yeah.
So hidden at the bottom of the tie, there'd be like the crested crane, which is the kind of the national bird.
I like that.
So that's what I'd have, yeah. So regular tie and everything, red tie, but then at the bottom like a crested crane that no one could see.
If I was going to the Champions League final, on a serious note, I think I would go pretty smart.
Yeah.
I think I'd go suit.
I think it needs that, doesn't it? It does need that.
I'd go suit with a, or maybe suit, but no tie. And maybe with a, no, because it's going to be warm, isn't it? Because it's May. It's
quite balmy.
And it's in Istanbul, so it's going to be really warm. Say if we were managing this year. No, actually I'd go suit and tie, top button undone, shirt sleeves rolled up.
I like that because it's just watching. I know we'll be very quick on this, but just watching those four Clasicos, been watching them again, obviously, recently, and seeing Pep looks like the absolute business in the suit. Pep
looks this is
incredible. You see that and you're like, you could be surrounded by 100,000 hostile fans and you look at that manager and go, we're good here. That's worth 100,000 people like screaming at us. That guy knows exactly what he's doing.
It's like I said in that sartorial piece back in like suits that were so tight fitting, but seemingly had room to spare.
Exactly. Yes. Perfectly put. Where you look at the suit and you're like, that person knows exactly what they're doing.
I mean, it helps if there's not an ounce of body fat on you.
That's true as well. That's true. Before I forget, talking of incredible touchline presences, I didn't mention this in the last podcast. I want to mention it quickly. One of the amazing things about having no fans in the ground is you can hear Emma Hayes' instructions.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Okay. I know this is just, I know I should have said this earlier in the podcast and I'll be very quick. That was mind blowing. Just hearing her tactical instructions and what she was encouraging her to do, press here, tight there, avoid transitions. That transition, stop that. Like none of these.
Her turning around, exasperated at the intensity of the game and how horrible it was in the second half, which I thought was incredible.
I loved that. Like this is the thing, I don't, you know, obviously like fans back in the stadiums, absolutely. The one thing I will just miss a little bit is just hearing the quality of the technical instructions and just the emotion from the coaches on the sideline.
As fun as it has been, I will not miss it one bit, actually. I know what you mean. Like it is the best of this bad situation, but yeah, I'm just, there's like, no. I don't want to hear Pep going, Bernardo, one more time.
Twice.
I don't want to hear it. All right, before we get out of here, Bundesliga. So, Julian Nagelsmann has been confirmed as the new Bayern Munich coach from the start of next season on a 5-year contract, which is quite incredible, and a transfer fee of 25 million euros.
It's a lot of faith, isn't it?
Paid to Rasenball Sport Leipzig.
The Bavarian returns to Bavaria.
I think he's a Bayern fan, isn't he? He was a Bayern fan growing up, played for 1860 through their youth academy. Makes a lot of sense, but also, as was widely speculated, Jesse Marsh is now been confirmed as the coach of RB Leipzig, moving from Salzburg. I think the first manager to make that transition.
And he's been within that ecosystem.
Yeah, but I mean, he's now managed New York Red Bulls. He's managed RB Salz, Red Bull Salzburg, and he was assistant to Ralf Rangnick for a year at Leipzig. So he is in the family.
There was a lot of to and fro on this, wasn't there?
Yeah, there was. I mean, Oli Glasner looks like he's set to leave Wolfsburg, which we've kind of talked about for a little while now. And it looked like he was going. So this wasn't a cut and dried thing for Marsh. And it's not something that Leipzig usually do. Now, obviously, we assume that whenever we talk about the Red Bull teams, that people know the relationship there and they're having this kind of football ecosystem owned by a drinks brand, allowing to move the pieces. I think 18 transfers have taken place from Red Bull Salzburg to RB Leipzig.
Wow, 18.
We assume that people know that there's a problematic nature to the setup, and we don't want to have to caveat that every time we talk about it. Personally, with the Jesse Marsh thing, I'm really intrigued to see how this is going to go. I wrote a little bit of a thread about it, actually. There were a lot of noises about, well, coming out of the club that RB Leipzig, they really want to attack Bayern next year, and they really want to go for the Bundesliga. That is their goal. They were close this year. They're not going to win it. They were Herbstmeister last season, and they didn't win it. But they've been pushing Bayern close for 2 years now. They've been their closest competitor for the last two seasons. I'm not 100% sure whether that appointment makes sense for that kind of push. I think Jesse Marsh is an incredibly talented coach, and he's done a really great job at the places he's been. There is a lot of hype around him, and he might do a really good job at Leipzig.
How much money are they going to spend? Because I'm not being funny. The Nagelsmann factor.
Yeah.
Nagelsmann is astonishing. Leipzig don't have the second best squad in the Bundesliga. No. They don't, actually. You could argue they don't have the fifth best squad, actually. You could argue fourth or fifth.
I think they're top four in terms of squad.
So you put Gladbach, Dortmund above them in terms of squad, I would say. I would put Gladbach and Dortmund above Leipzig. I put Bayern have got the best squad, in my opinion, followed by Dortmund, followed by Gladbach. Yeah, I put Leipzig fourth. But like what Gladbach's pieces are, I think Gladbach's attacking pieces are elite. I think that's a coaching thing.
Maybe.
And I love Rosa, but I just think, yeah, so Leipzig, I would say like maybe fourth best squad, definitely in relation to depth. And Nagelsmann got that extra out of that attack. Like Nagelsmann didn't have, the kind of pieces that he's going to be working with in Bayern are of a different level, right? And I worry that Marsh, when Nagelsmann went to Leipzig, he had to add basically like 20 goals from somewhere. He got like a play or two in, but he had to add goals from like, and I just think to galvanize that Leipzig front line without major additions is very, very difficult, especially when you've got Rosa going to Dortmund and Gladbach having fresh blood at the top as well. Mm-hmm. I think it's a big ask actually for Leipzig. And I like Marsh, and I think Leipzig will be, you know, they should be top four thereabouts, but they've got to spend a lot of money, Ryan.
I think there's going to be a lot of pressure on him as well. And that's the thing that my personal preference for Jesse Marsh would have been for him to go to another Bundesliga side, actually.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I would have loved to have seen him at somewhere like Bayer Leverkusen, actually. I think Bayer Leverkusen or Wolfsburg, maybe Wolfsburg or Eintracht, actually, were my two preferences, maybe with Bayer Leverkusen as a third preference, because I think there are slightly different goalposts for those jobs. Leipzig want to mount a title push now, and that's a hard thing to do in a new league. And yeah, he's been an assistant there, and I know that, but I don't know. You know, it's like I want him to succeed on a personal point of view. I think it's quite problematic if Red Bull succeed on a sporting point of view.
I think.
So it's like it's a very complicated mixture of emotions for Jesse Marsh, because he seems like a really good guy, clearly a very talented coach. I think there would have been less scrutiny on him if he'd gone elsewhere, actually.
I
mean, he's put himself in like front and center in terms of like getting scrutiny.
Yeah, he has.
But saying that, all of the top six are going to have new managers next season. And like I said in that thread, I don't think Nagelsmann to Bayern is as smooth as people may think it might be, because I think Bayern might get a little bit worse before they get better again under Nagelsmann, put it that way, because this isn't a squad that is massively wild on new ideas. And we saw that with Niko Kovac, who was a different thing, and Niko Kovac's football wasn't really suited to the squad. But there was a point, I mean, he did still do the double in the first season.
Yeah, yeah.
he was trying different things, and it really didn't go down that well with with the Bayern squad. Nagelsmann is going to demand a hell of a lot from a load of players who have won a hell of a lot more than he has. And that is where it gets tricky. When you go into a club that is expected to succeed as opposed to a club that is expecting progress, which is Nagelsmann so far has only been at clubs that have wanted progress. Leipzig aren't going to fire you if you don't win the league. Bayern will.
But maybe the length of the contract is a sign that the fact that Bayern know it will be bumpy.
If they do, then this is interesting because they haven't seemed like a particularly patient bunch recently, Bayern. And Salah Hamazic, Oli Kahn, Karl-Heinz Rummenigge, those three dudes are colossal egos at a football club that makes a lot of noise anyway. I don't think Nagelsmann will take any shit there. And I think he backs himself enough to know that he's got a 5-year contract as well. If they want to fire him at any point, he's going to be fine financially.
But that 5 years, are they saying with that 5 years, are they saying that Nagelsmann is the future and actually he's as important to them as an elite signing on the field?
Well, I think it is, because if you look at the kind of breakdown of the age thing within this Bayern squad, there's going to be a lot of turnover soon.
Right.
David Alaba's gone at the end of the season. Boateng's going to go as well. Lewandowski isn't getting younger. Manuel Neuer's not getting younger. They've got Alexander Nübel waiting to become the number one, which I actually think Bayern need a better number one, because Nübel's form in his last season at Schalke kind of fell off a cliff.
It's a traumatic place to go from there to Bayern.
There's quite a lot of work to do actually at Bayern, look going forward. Right.
And this is why I think in a way that Bayern are prepared for a bumpy transition.
Yeah, but this, going back to what my rambling thing was, this might play into Marsh's advantage.
You're trying to strike, yeah.
Because if you're not going up against Hansi Flick, or you're not going up against a Heinkes, yeah, someone who knows, who is basically like going to put everything back in its right place and let them go.
You walk in the lobby at Bayern, there's piano music playing, and it's not like that. It's going to be like, there's going to be a lot of unrest.
And you're going to have there are more unknown factors in the Bundesliga next season for the top six than there's been in as long as I can remember.
That's true.
And definitely not since Bayern's run began. So you've got Rosa at Dortmund, you've got Nagelsmann at Bayern, Marsh at Leipzig, Adi Hütter, Gladbach. Yeah. And then you will have new managers at Wolfsburg and Eintracht Frankfurt, and probably Bayer Leverkusen as well. Those are all good squads. I know a lot of people say this every year with the Bundesliga. I think it is possible to say that Nagelsmann is one of the best potential managers in the world. He's definitely one of the best coaches in the world.
Yeah.
But also say that that doesn't necessarily mean that Bayern are going to win a treble next year, or even necessarily the league. And I wrapped up the thread with my, like, after my slight concerns about the kind of the fit for Marsh, the potential situation, but basically just saying we could be here in a year's time after Marsh picks up the league and Bayern have just won a Champions League and everyone's just like, yeah, cool thread, right? Personally, I'm not calling it either way, but what I am saying is that it is making stuff super, super interesting for next season.
Very much so. And I'm glad you said that. You know, I just want to say quickly on Marsh as well, I've said about backing in the transfer market, they've lost Upamecano to Bayern. Funnily enough, I think they can absorb the loss of Upamecano, actually. I think they can absorb that loss as long as they don't lose any more from the defence. And I think a couple more players in the sort of midfield and attack. But Marsh at Leverkusen would have been great, because I feel like he could have elevated what Peter Bosz was doing on a more consistent level. And I feel like I feel like the Leverkusen squad has the tools to do more than it did this year. I think that's a squad that's a bit of a sleeping giant, to be honest.
Also though, for any American listeners, don't forget you've already got an American in the league, Pellegrino Matarazzo. Done an amazing job, one of the success stories for Stuttgart this season. Honestly, I was thinking about doing a piece towards the end of the season about other success stories in the Bundesliga, and he was the first person on my list. I've been meaning to write about him for ages. I might actually write about him and Marsh this week or next week, because he's done an unbelievable job. And two American managers in the Bundesliga next season.
And I think also playing football that is thrilling.
Man, Stuttgart are fun.
Do they? Yeah, they are. But will they hang on to some of those players?
Will they hang on to Mislintat?
Yeah, and it's this Silas Wamangituka, unbelievable player for... Yeah.
That injury.
He would fit a club like Gladbach perfectly. Like, there's But actually also, but also beyond Germany, like wide forwards like that, like I just think he's one to invest in.
Mm.
The way that like Pep invested in Gundogan, even with the injury, he's a player just worth buying and then just rehabbing. But yeah.
It's going to be interesting to see where Glasner goes.
Yeah, was it Derek Ray talking about maybe him going back to Salzburg?
They've promoted from within though. They've promoted the assistant.
See, I feel like Glasner like has done a superb job at Wolfsburg, and I don't know. I think there's
I mean, to put it into perspective, they're about to qualify for the Champions League for the third time in their history.
And that was a team that was really struggling to score goals when he arrived and struggled actually about a year after. He's really got everything out of that squad. I wonder, I think he's due like a really, really good job after this, but where would it be? I don't know.
I'm trying to think. Because the Leipzig job for him kind of made sense.
It would have been ideal.
I wonder if he goes to Eintracht. When fans come back next season, Eintracht is a fucking great club to be at.
I think that's a great move, actually, Eintracht. I think it's sideways in terms of...
What, positioning? I mean, they're not really sideways. They're like a point ahead.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I think it's actually an incredible move because I think he'd be given more tools there in attack.
Eintracht is such an interesting project for someone now.
I think they're eternally interesting. Yeah.
That is a club that is waiting to be turbocharged, I think.
Yeah.
It's a sleeping giant, I think.
One brilliant manager, and it changes everything.
We should wrap.
Let's do it.
Have we forgotten something? Probably.
There's always more football, though, isn't there?
Oh, I know what I meant to say.
Oh my goodness. I'm out of here. One day we're going to walk off the podcast. I'll just walk off.
Yeah. Hope everyone's still staying safe and well. Don't forget you can check theringer.com/soccer. You can check our outros playlist on Spotify. Search for Stadio Outros on Spotify. We're playing out on Vanikos. I Hate Disco, Not the Dance. I don't hate disco though, so I don't approve of this title, but...
You approve of the groove though.
I do approve of the groove.
There you go.
Kwanga. Look at this guy. It's almost like
bars
he's...
upon bars.
It's almost like he's a poet.
Listen, still got it.
Any books, any books out this week?
Not this week, no.
No. Taking a week off? As many hooks as he has books.
In the end, it was all about groove. Exactly.
Do you want to add anything?
No, I'm good.
Yeah?
I'm good.
Love
yeah,
it.
I'm
oh, good. This is great. This is going smoothly. I love this.
Said my piece.
Nice tight edit. Much love, everyone. Have a great weekend. We'll be back on Monday.
See you then.
This episode is brought to you by Empower. You got money questions like, can I retire early? What are my best savings options? Can I afford to pay for my kids' education? Luckily, Empower has all the answers. With Empower's real-time dashboard and real live conversations, you get clarity on your real-life financial goals. So join 18 million Americans and Empower what's next. Start today at empower.com. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more. Sponsored by Empower, not an endorsement or a statement of satisfaction by a client.